I didn't think the pain from the shingles rash would affect simple, everyday tasks like bathing, getting dressed, or even walking around. I was wrong. Though not everyone at risk will develop it, 99% of people over the age of 50 already have the virus that causes shingles, and it could reactivate at any time. I developed it, and the blistering rash lasted for weeks. Don't learn the hard way, like I did. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist today. Sponsored by GSK.
This is The Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of The Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
All I give a damn about
is gotta move the back.
God, I love that guy.
This is The Rich Eisen Show with guest host Tom Pelissero, live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Pajas grounds it back to Kirkery. He can't find it. He throws home. It's one.
Today's guest, CBS Sports NFL analyst Jason McCourty, Yahoo Sports college football analyst Ross Dellinger, and now, sitting in for Rich, it's Tom Pelissero.
Welcome to a Rich Eisenless edition of the Rich Eisen Show here on a Friday. Tom Pelissero sitting in the chair for Rich. Thrilled to be making my Disney Plus debut. Also on the ESPN app, ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance with my guys. Chris Brockman is here.
Yeah, Tommy Pete, great to see you in person, man.
Jason
How you doing,
Feller bud? Holding What's it down up, as Tommy usual because Mike Del Tufo's just posting photos of him at a Dua Lipa concert repeatedly for like 72 hours here. Never seems to be around when I'm here. TJ Jefferson, who is, I had to say, it seemed like you floated into the studio here today, TJ. It seemed like you slept well after that game last night.
I'm still recording you like per usual. So guys, say hi to Tom.
Hey, what's up? Hey, Tom. Great to see you, man.
Yeah, man. It was an interesting game as a Cowboys fan, those being two of my least favorite teams. I was really into that game last night at Camp Front. It was a fun watch.
We also got Brian Burns, late addition to the guest list. Did not necessarily expect that I'd be on the stationary bike this morning seeing, like, can we get someone from the Giants on to talk about the biggest win they've had in 3 years? It's never a good sign.
Was that a workout flex, too,
it's,
by the way?
I keep myself on my own time zone when I come out here. It's never a good sign when, about public perception, when the network broadcasting your game is promoting a documentary about a guy on the other team.
Oh, yeah.
If you're with Prime Video, you're making a calculated bet here.
Right.
That the main audience for that documentary is not going to turn off the game in anger by the start of the fourth quarter and stick around to watch the Saquon Barkley documentary. We'll talk about the Eagles because there is a lot going on with a team that.
A lot going on.
When
man.
They were 3-0, so when they were 4-0, there were complaints and concerns in the media, from the fans, from the public, about the state of the offense. Now that they're 4-2 and have stumbled over the last couple of games and did not score a point in the second half last night.
Jeez.
There's a lot to unpack about what direction this thing ends up going in Philadelphia, what they have to do as they go into a mini bye to get this right. But I want to start by talking about the Giants. A team, a front office that has caught as much flack as anybody over the last 2 years.
Deservedly so.
I mean, yeah, they brought it up.
About how they handled Saquon, about how they've handled the roster, about re-signing Daniel Jones, about doing a documentary where they explained their reasoning on Hard Knocks for why they were doing it. And I sat in this chair two summers ago and said that was the best behind-the-scenes football show I had ever seen. Because at minimum, you were telling people, this is why we're doing these things.
Right.
We don't know if we're right or wrong. We're using our best educated response mechanisms here. We are trying to plan. Here's how the cap works. Here's how money works.
Yep.
This is why we're doing those things.
Yep.
They had the absolute worst case scenario play out last year, which is not only did the player who they controversially let walk, they didn't trade him, contrary to what you might have heard a couple of times on the broadcast last night. He left in free agency. Mm-hmm. It was the worst case scenario for that guy to go and not just play well, not just stay healthy, which has been a challenge for Saquon, but run for 2,000 yards and win a Super Bowl. That is the worst case scenario here. But the reasoning didn't change. Look at what happened last night. And I understand this is a Thursday night game. Those can be weird. It is week six of the season. There's still a two-win team that's got a ton that they have to accomplish here to be even relevant when we get to December. But it felt like a moment for them last night. And everything and everyone that contributed last night, it all comes back to the decisions that they made over the last 2 years for what they were going to do with the roster moving forward. Yes, in 2022, coming off of a playoff season where they went and won a playoff game on the road in Minnesota, they wanted to retain their core. They tried to re-sign Saquon to a deal that was pretty close to what he ended up taking a year later from the Eagles. They couldn't get it done. So they tag him. They re-sign Daniel Jones. And you spend 2 years in this kind of purgatory at the quarterback position. Fast forward a year, a couple more attempts to get Saquon done. They decide to let him walk. It doesn't matter who your running back is if you don't have the quarterback. They used some of that money and, of course, draft picks to go and trade for Brian Burns, who was everywhere on the field and will be here before the end of this show. He's going to join us live. He's tied for the league lead with 7 sacks. Damn. He is an absolute monster and a menace on the field, as you saw last night. That is a decision that if you went back in time, they would do 100 times out of 100. Pay the elite pass rusher, not pay the 6-year veteran running back. Again, I'm taking nothing away from Saquon. The Eagles won a Super Bowl with him. Saquon Barkley was not going to be the difference between the Giants winning the Super Bowl last year and not.
That's true.
Flat out. It was not going to be the difference. So what do you do at running back now? You draft Tyrone Tracy at over 1,000 yards from scrimmage as a rookie, and then you draft Cam Scataboo, who might be the most fun story in the NFL right now. I went back this morning and just watched the sequence about 6-7 minutes left in the game. They're around midfield, and they're just calling inside run after inside run to Cam Scataboo and going, try to stop us. It's like their equivalent of the tush push. He is running into traffic, and you see the entire pile move down the field. Mm-hmm. And the fans... You know, Eddie from the Bronx, who was probably screaming on the first drive of the game, there's Saquon just running through people. He's on Cam Scataboo's side. Cam Scataboo and Tyrone Tracy, throw Devin Singletary in too. They're making a fraction of what Saquon Barkley is. They've had wide receiver health issues throughout this season. Malik Nabers out for the season with a torn ACL. They didn't have Darius Slayton last night. They're throwing to Lil Jordan Humphrey.
Who's not little, by the way. He's
on the practice squad. He's big Jordan.
Big guy.
But it's jump ball situations, and he's going up and making plays. And you get Jackson Dart. You get Abdul Carter at the top. You didn't panic and take a quarterback higher than you thought you should take him. But you trade back into the first round, and you take Jackson Dart, who, again, I understand this is one game last night. But if you want to have hope about the Giants moving forward, it's that maybe... And they certainly think this. They think they've got the quarterback. They think they've got the guy. You see, Jackson Dart, he might have a little fine coming his way for the other part of the Michael Jackson dance that he did last night. You can't actually do that. That's Shmo. Probably going to be $5,000-$10,000. Exactly. You can't go to that part. And that'll be Jackson's first experience with the NFL fine system. Doesn't it seem like Jackson Dart and Cam Scataboo both have a little something wrong with them?
Yeah, but in the best way possible.
In a great, great way. They both seem to have a screw loose.
Look at that photo right now.
Cam Scataboo is going on the TNF set post-game and ripping his shirt off Hulk Hogan style.
Like full-on Hogan with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
With the whole rug of Ryan Fitzpatrick's chest.
So much.
Which when you're sweaty... When you're a little wet and sticky, that's a bold move because you might be taking some of Ryan Fitzpatrick with you after that. But both of them just seem to be, I hate to, do the generational taglines, but they both got this certain Gen Z to them. Certainly Jackson Dart does. Cam Scataboo just might be nuts.
Yeah, for sure.
He is a different guy. Uh-huh. I've interviewed him before on the Insiders over on NFL Network. He's a different type of guy. He can be just very soft spoken and straightforward. And then he can go into the absolute... wild man type of mode. Think of these last two draft classes for the Giants. Again, these are all things that have taken place since they ultimately let Saquon Barkley walk. Again, I will remind people, after several attempts over the previous 2 years to extend Saquon Barkley. They drafted Malik Nabers, Tyler Newbin, who's starting for him, Drew Phillips, who's been an impact player in the defensive backfield. Theo Johnson was everywhere last night.
Yep.
A breakthrough type of performance for him. And Tyrone Tracy. This year's draft class starts with Abdul Carter, Jackson Dart, Cam Scadaboo. That's your core that you're trying to build around now. And if you're retaining Saquon Barkley, a great player who we've seen be one of the best players in the NFL, there are moves you cannot make. You do not have Brian Burns. You're not adding him to a mix that now includes him and Kayvon Thibodeau and Abdul Carter. You don't have that guy who's co-leading the NFL in sacks. If you're retaining Saquon Barkley, it's a salary cap league. You don't have that flexibility. And then at the quarterback position, yes, you kind of had to try to patch this thing together and build it around Daniel Jones, because coming off of a playoff year, you don't really want to blow it up at that point and go back to ground zero, but you were tied to somebody who, as well as he's playing right now in Indianapolis, and he certainly is, you probably felt like there's a ceiling for this guy. So what did they do? They didn't go, well, we're all going to get fired if Saquon goes to Philly, because they knew he was going to Philly. We're all going to get fired if he plays well and they go and make a playoff run and Saquon's a big part of it. You try to do the right thing. And Joe Shane, Brian Daboll, the Mara family, and certainly John, who's fighting cancer right now, had to be wherever he is smiling at that game last night, because there have not been a lot of those types of moments for the Giants over the last 3 years. Yeah. Every fan, every media member wanted everybody fired. This is why you do the right thing, even when it's hard. If you get fired for doing the right thing, you accept the consequences. Doing things because public pressure and let's just give Saquon $16, $17 million and let's retain him and know we're probably not going to be very good? Or do we free up those resources, draft a couple of dudes who are both studs? Tyrone Tracy's a really good player too, and try to build this thing in the big picture. I don't know where the rest of the season goes for the Giants, but for at least one night, when you rewind and go back to Hard Knocks 18 months ago, this is the math problem they were trying to solve. It's a complicated math problem. It's in advanced algebra at the least. Advanced. But it seems like you at least can understand why, when they graphed this out on the board, they came to the conclusions they did. On the flip side of it, you have an Eagles team that, when they walked off the field in New Orleans, and it's always hard to project out what teams are going to be. There's turnover. Guys age at various points. There's going to be players who suffer injuries. The Eagles have not necessarily had those circumstances. They haven't had a devastating injury to one of their core players. It's a lot of the same dudes. I don't think anybody is aging out. You had, the likes of, the Brandon Grahams and Fletcher Coxes and Jason Kelsey's, right, who over years have been there.
Right.
Obviously, some of those guys were not on the team last year, but you're not having those guys. Like, Saquon is not at an age where he's falling off. You saw Saquon. He still looks like Saquon last night. AJ Brown, who was banged up in camp, but they got him the football last night. The passing game seemed to be off just in general. There's obviously a pick six in that game. I go back to the miss to Devontae Smith.
Oh,
it's a coverage bust on a night that Shane Bowen's defense was really, really impressive. They completely turn loose Devontae Smith, and Jalen Hurts misses him by a lot. Mm-hmm. I'm not a quarterback expert, but that is a situation where put some air under the ball and let one of the fastest dudes in the NFL just go and get it. Then post-game, because everything for 3 days, it's a short week, there had been a lot of discussion, including on the pregame show, about the meeting early in the week. It was reported. Jalen Hurts talked about it. Saquon Barkley talked about it. A.J. Brown was asked about the meeting, and he said this.
You had this meeting this past week with Saquon and Jalen. What was behind that?
I don't call a meeting.
Oh, okay. The meeting never.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
Those guys said it did happen.
Oh, we didn't talk to them.
You weren't in the meeting.
I don't recall.
Or you don't want to.
I don't recall.
He's got a smile on his face. Okay, I like AJ Brown a lot. I've always enjoyed talking with him. I think he's one of the great tone setters in the league. But that was unusual, was it not?
Yeah.
Was that
pretty
not
weird?
I mean, if he doesn't recall it, maybe it's time for another meeting. A meeting about the meeting, because the parts still didn't connect the way that the Eagles want. I don't personally lay this at the feet. I think it's way overly simplistic to lay this at the feet of Kevin Petullo, the new offensive coordinator. Every year, there's some level of this with the Eagles where early in the season, they're trying to figure some things out. Jalen Hurts has had a different play caller every year going back to high school. He has never had any consistency through Alabama to Oklahoma to obviously the Eagles, whether it was Nick Sirianni calling it in his first year, turning it over to Steichen, then Steichen leaves, hand it to Brian Johnson. That doesn't work out. You go and name a new play caller once again, then he goes ahead and gets a job there in Kellen Moore. There's all kinds of circumstances here, but it just doesn't look right. And the Eagles in general don't quite look right.
Yep.
Some of the biggest plays in that game, just in the fourth quarter, you mishandle a kickoff out of bounds. You have a critical fumble. And again, the pick six and the miss. Like the only thing that goes right in the big picture in that game is, yes, the tush push is still really good. So good last night, in fact, running it four consecutive times, that it does, sitting there watching it, just makes me think they don't have confidence in anything else they're doing. You're paying A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith as two of the highest paid wide receivers in the NFL. You got the highest paid running back in the NFL.
A red zone opportunity? Like, what is happening?
And you've got Jalen Hurts, of course, who was the Super Bowl MVP, and not just because he can duck his head in behind the guards who may or may not leave a split second early. I do find the comedy in after the third and two tush push, and then they cut to Kevin Petullo on the sideline, who's going like this. Yeah. He's got the play card. What could he be calling? It's fourth and inches. We got to cover that play. We know it's the tush push. It's unstoppable. But there's not a lot else that it seems like the Eagles have a high degree of confidence in. Yeah. Nick Sirianni said it after the game last night, that you got to treat this like a mini bye. We'll hear from Lane Johnson a little bit later on in the show, because he's talking about we're becoming too predictable offensively. Well, the part that's predictable is the unstoppable part. The unpredictable parts are where you're not executing things the way that you need to. It was a weird night once again for the Eagles, who for a 4-2 team that is still on top of the division is going to face all kinds of questions for the next 10 days. And it was a great night for the New York Giants. We'll see how the rest of this season goes. But if you want hope, those two wild man rookies are a big part of the puzzle. And you hope that's kind of the new definition of what Giants football is as you move into the future. Jason McCourty is going to be joining us after this. He was at the game last night. Again, phone lines will be open throughout the show, 844-204-RICH. Thanks to those of you who are watching us on Disney Plus, the ESPN app. Of course, listen to us on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Let's dive a little deeper into this and the rest of an exciting week six ahead when Jason McCourty joins us right on the other side of this break with me, Tom Pelissero, in for Rich on the Rich Eisen Show.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Buying a car can be like a long road trip. There's negotiating prices, lots of fees, and a difficult process. But with an auto loan from Navy Federal, you're on the highway to higher savings. We want our members to save more on their next auto purchase. That's why we offer great rates, military discounts, and pre-approvals that are good for 90 days. Plus, we offer most decisions in seconds. You could even get $200 when you refinance your auto loans from another lender with us. So if you want to save more on your next auto purchase, learn more and apply for an auto loan at NavyFederal.org/autoloans. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA. Credit and collateral subject to approval. Terms and conditions apply for military discounts. Refinance loan must be at least $5,000 to be eligible for the $200. Terms and conditions apply. As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature. And it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more. Rich Eisen here for Sonos, the speakers that bring every game to life in my own house. With studio quality sound, Sonos makes you feel like you're right there in the stadium. Whether you're cheering on your team, binging your favorite show, or listening to the hottest songs, Sonos fills every room with incredible sound. Setup is easy. Just plug in, open the Sonos app, and you're ready to go. Want stadium quality sound at home just like me? Because I love Sonos. You will too. Explore soundbars, speakers, and more at Sonos.com. Sonos, they look as good as they sound.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
Rich Eisen lists Rich Eisen Show. Tom Pelissero in for Rich on Disney Plus, the ESPN app, and of course, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. You did not dream that last night, even if you might have dozed off at some point in the third, fourth quarter. Giants routed the Eagles. Our next guest was there. He is a Super Bowl champ. He's a 13-year NFL veteran, now CBS analyst. You can see basically Jason McCourty everywhere. I think most famously, what he's best known for was releasing a single with me on the acoustic guitar and him singing.
Whoa.
Back during his Good Morning Football days. I'm not going to ask you, Jason, to sing today, mainly because of how that segment went. But I got to say, in my weird memories of 9 years at NFL Network, that one is really high up on the list.
I give you credit because you actually have musical talent. Myself, I exposed myself to everybody to show how bad of singing, but I got to show how much of a team player. I bought into the segment and it was absolutely brutal, but I appreciate you for playing along.
You absolutely went for it, which I appreciated, but the moment you opened your mouth, I was like, oh boy, there's no rhythm, there's no pitch, nothing here. But appreciate you being here today, man. You were at the game. Last night, MetLife Stadium, I saw the photo on social media, you and your son. When you walk through the doors of that stadium, what are the chances in your mind you're going to watch the Giants salting that game away in the fourth quarter?
My son wanted to wear his Jalen Hurts jersey to the game because at this age, he's 9. He just wants to be associated with the winner. He didn't care really which team it's going to be, but he was so sure that the Eagles are going to win. I'm like, buddy, like, New Jersey, Northeast, like rolling up with a Jalen Hurts jersey. I don't want to have to fight anybody. So let's just go neutral, put on just an NFL jacket. But I didn't expect this. The Giants team we saw a week ago with 5 straight turnovers, with so many young guys playing in their game. And then the Eagles on the other side coming off of a loss to the Denver Broncos where they had a lead in the fourth quarter and kind of gave the game away. You expected the Eagles to be fired up that they didn't have to wait an entire week to play again. And I expected them to win that game and win it kind of big. And a lot of credit goes to Brian Daboll. He's been able to get this team going, even coming off that loss on the road, to come back home. The game plan centered around Jackson Dart and how it was able to kind of show itself throughout the course of that game. They end up going down and continue to fight and really put a butt whooping on the Philadelphia Eagles. And I think it puts them in a spot where at 4-2, yes, you still feel good if you're an Eagles fan that you are where you are. But it's kind of that teetering point where is this going to be the 2023 Eagles where they were 10-1 and then absolutely collapsed? Or is it going to be more like last year where early on in the season, Hurts had turnovers, they were struggling, they went into their bye week, they came up with some answers, and they went on a terrific run to obviously win the Super Bowl. A lot of question marks surrounding the Eagles right now.
So if you look at this Eagles offense, Jason, you spent a long time in your career obviously game planning against and trying to pick things apart. What's going on? They're pretty close to full strength. It's not like they got injuries all over the place. Why, outside of the tush push, we're calling the tush push 4th and inches. Besides the tush push, why does it seem like nothing else is on time, on tempo, the way that we expect?
I think part of it is when you're a really good football team and really good offense like they were a year ago, each and every year you have to kind of recreate yourself and go back and look at it, what you did well and how you have to adjust and adapt to whatever the new pieces are on your football team. Last year, they decided after the bye week, you know what? the best attribute of our offense is our line and our running back in Saquon Barkley. And we're going to fully commit to it because he's picking up 3 yards before he's even getting touched by a defender. And then he's able to do the rest. You come into this season, they haven't been able to do that. They've tried to line up in the shotgun like they always do and just run the ball at people. And Saquon is getting hit in the backfield damn near every single time. So you don't have the team to just bully people the way you did last year. We've seen him over the last 2 weeks try to rely on the passing game a lot more and put the ball in Jalen Hurts' hands. It's too vanilla. And I don't know if when you're looking at the Eagles, if they feel as though, hey, we're doing what Jalen Hurts likes and we're doing the things that work to the best of what his abilities are, or if they just feel like he can't handle more with their offense, more motion, more movement, different things with the wide receivers. You're not seeing that. A lot of times they're just lining up and they're saying, we're going to beat you one-on-one. And they don't have the ability to do that this year. So I think when you watch them, to your point, outside of the tush push and the variations that they've done off of the tush push, they're struggling. And you're seeing it on first and second down, which has led to them. We haven't even seen that many tush pushes the last 2 weeks because they're always in third and six plus because they're not able to pick up the necessary yards on first and second down. This is an offense that has completely lost their identity, and they have a 10-day break now. So somewhere along the line, they have to figure out exactly who they are.
Flip side of this, I also was struck by how the Eagles didn't seem to have a whole lot of answers for the things Jackson Dart was doing, particularly off schedule. There's kind of this looseness in his game. He's coming out of the pocket. It looks like a lot of times, I don't want to call it, not full backyard football. I'm sure they have rules to the scramble drills, but like a lot of their big plays are coming from him either running or just getting outside. If you're scheming this up against him, you watched that tape last night and you're figuring out, okay, how do we not let Cam Scadaboo gash us and not let the quarterback run around and make things happen? What do you do against him?
I mean, the first thing is you talked about him scrambling, and you would hate as a defense. The one thing you go into the game, you're saying, hey, rush lanes. And I promise you, everybody on the Eagles defensive front probably talked about it going into the game. Guys, we got to stay in our rush lanes. And then his first touchdown, it just parts like the Red Sea. And he's gone up the middle. Now it's one-on-one with Zach Bond, and he had no shot. And now it ends up in a touchdown. So you go in with these rules, and now you have to be disciplined when the lights turn on. I'll also say this for the Eagles defense, when you don't have Jalen Carter in the front, when Quinyon Mitchell ends up with a hamstring injury, you don't have him on the outside, those are two of your very best players on the defensive side of the ball. And every team loses good players. But when you don't have guys behind it, it fully exposes you. It was one thing when Quinyon Mitchell was in there and they were attacking Kelee Ringo. When he exited the game, now you have two corners in Adoree Jackson and Kelee Ringo. Guys aren't pressed up the way Kenyon Mitchell does. Now they're playing off. Now it's easy access throws for Jackson Dart to be able to get the ball on the outside. With no Jalen Carter in the middle, now you're running Cam Scadaboo in the first half where it really wasn't making much hay in the run game. But that's the thing. They continue to run the ball, and it started to break open in the second half, and it became a Scadaboo second half where it was a Dart first half, and they just continued to pound the Eagles. And I think if you're watching that game as an Eagles fan, you're seeing your all-pro linebacker, Zach Bond, get ran over by Scadaboo. You're seeing him getting made a fool of in the middle of the field by Jackson Dart. You don't know where else to turn on a defense when your offense is struggling as well. There was nothing really clicking for the Eagles last night.
Jason McCourty breaking it all down here on the Rich Eisen Show. Tom Pelissero in for Rich. You got a trip to Miami coming up this weekend, Jason. Chargers at Dolphins. The Chargers, you talk about teams losing people. I mean, they're gutted. The Dolphins are beat up at this point. If you look at LA, where they've been over these last couple of weeks, where we were talking about them the first few weeks of the season, of this might be the team to beat in the in the AFC West, if not the AFC. What do you see, and how do they get things going back the right direction?
A lot of it is, you just said, beat up. A lot of it is the injuries on the offensive line. I mean, the first 3 weeks, Justin Herbert was just balling, being able to get the ball out, putting it wherever he wanted. We saw him creating plays with his legs, doing so much for this offense. And already we knew Slater was gone for the season. Then you lose Joe Alt. in the Giants game early on. And now you're playing with essentially your third and fourth offensive tackle. Then Mekhi Becton is banged up on the inside. Bozeman at the center has really struggled as well. So Justin Herbert went in the first 3 weeks where I think it was he was averaging like 8 yards per attempt to now the last 2 weeks, it's been 5 yards per attempt. So he doesn't have the time that he had in those first 3 weeks to be able to get the ball down the field and get it in his playmaker's hands. So now he's under pressure constantly, and the amount of hits that he has taken in the last few weeks is not sustainable for this offense. So they have to try to figure out a way amidst all of the injuries and now losing their running back in Amari Hampton, who kind of has taken off in the last few weeks. How do you still continue to generate explosive plays when you don't have a ton of time? Do you take people out of the routes and leave more guys in the block to give Herbert more time? How are you going to be able to run the ball now with Haskins and Vidal in the backfield when you don't have the high draft pick and Najee Harris is also on IR? That's going to be the struggle for this offense to figure out Greg Roman, their coordinator, how he can generate and still be able to do some things so they can put points on the board.
The Dolphins lost, I believe, 3/5 of their offensive line by week one. That's created a challenge for a team that already, I've always said, Mike McDaniel has one of the hardest jobs in football because every week he's got to come up with a game plan for the quarterback to not get hit because bad things happen when Tua Tagovailoa gets hit. But when you look at the numbers on Tua, he's not taken a great deal of sacks, but he's one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL the first 3 years with McDaniel. Now suddenly he's down near the bottom. What do you see? And when you're talking to him, what do you hear about what's going on with Tua right now?
Well, it's both sides of the line for them. Defensively, they can't stop the run because they're struggling up front in the way they're fitting a lot of their run plays. And then offensively, they from the first game of the season, they were excited. They had James Daniel, who brought over from Pittsburgh. Austin Jackson was going to be the blind side of their offensive line. Tua on the right side. Both of those guys end up injured in week one. So now you're playing with two backups. Now Cole Strange is playing right guard for them, someone they picked up off of the Browns practice squad. So they've gone through so many injuries. And then the right guard, Jonas Avenea, he's a rookie. He's still learning on the job. So for Tua, a lot of it is you got to get the ball out so fast and make a play. And that brings down the efficiency. And yes, he's not getting hit as much, but the offense isn't able to operate the way that we saw it operate in 2022. And now you couple all of that with the fact that Tyreek Hill isn't going to be out there for the remainder of the season for them. Jalen Waddle had one hell of a game. So did Darren Waller in the first half, being able to do all of his damage. But now for them is how do you adjust as the game goes on, as the season goes on? How do you get the run game going to be able to take some of that pressure off of Tua and get Achane in space to do some of the things? But for them, very similar to the Chargers on the other side of the ball, this offensive line is so banged up that you're trying to find out ways, McDaniel is, to still get the offense going and getting the ball out of Tua's hands and their playmakers. But you have to do it so fast and do it so efficiently.
You, of course, spent a lot of your career with the Tennessee Titans. You won a Super Bowl with the Patriots. Two teams that there are different points in the young quarterback development. But what we saw last week, Drake May with kind of a breakthrough type of performance against Buffalo. Cam Ward, albeit with a lot of help from weird stuff happening in Arizona, but he was throwing dots down the stretch in that game to keep him in it. When you look at those two young quarterbacks, what do you see?
Man, it's a beautiful thing when you can feel like in your locker room you have the guy that can lead you. And I think last Sunday night when we watched Drake May and we watched the New England Patriots, you saw a team that really believes they have the guy that can lead them to the promised land, that at some point could be hoisting a Lombardi trophy in his career, making clutch plays in the fourth quarter, the moment not being too big. And I remember being out there in the summer and getting a chance to talk to Josh McDaniels, their offensive coordinator, and he just had a big old smile on his face when he talked about Drake May. And it wasn't just the physical tools, but it was also the mental approach, how when they got there, Drake wanted to learn everything about the offense from the foundation on up, setting protections, knowing where the hots are, all of those things. He wanted to challenge himself to learn them, and he has. And we've seen from weeks one through week five, the improvement of how he's understanding the offense, and then obviously the chemistry that he's being able to build with Stephon Diggs. I think on the other side, what we're seeing from Cam Ward is we're seeing a young guy being able to thrive through the chaos. for the Tennessee Titans, their roster starting out this season wasn't going to be a great one that surrounded him. And even early on, drops from a lot of his receivers, including Calvin Ridley. And he's continued, even from the preseason, he's continued to put it all on his shoulders. The leadership qualities that he possesses at such a young age, man, it's exciting to watch. And even in the midst of last week where you see him going off in the presser, you have a guy that genuinely cares about this team, about the people around him. You just want to see them start to figure it out and move forward. And to your point, Cam Ward, I think, played awesome a week ago, and things had to go in their favor. The ball had to bounce their way, as we like to say, to be able to win that game. I don't know if that's going to continue to happen, but you want to see Cam Ward continue to get better for that offense.
I'm glad you brought that up, the press conference the week before. That's where he was asked about the offense. He said, "We ass." That was his answer. Yep. I love the honesty. I love the bluntness, and it fits with what I see. And I didn't play in the NFL, but even watching the way that Cam Ward commands the huddle, when they were down a couple touchdowns the week before and it's the fourth quarter and some guys would come out there, their shoulders are down, they're soaking into the huddle, Cam Ward is coming out there and like letting guys know, like, we are getting this thing going. I imagine there's a unique dynamic anytime you've got a rookie coming in and doing that. But I also would imagine if the guy is playing like Cam Ward played down the stretch last week, you're like, hell yeah, come and lead us.
You need that at that position. And that's the one thing that he has shown since he got there. In training camp, he got into a tussle with Jeffrey Simmons on the other side of the ball. And your quarterback is out there nose to nose with one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL. So that just shows you what he has and what he's made of on the inside. I think watching that press conference for me is as frustrating because you have this young guy, and I don't know Cam Ward personally, but whenever you watched him since he's come into the NFL, even all of the interviews and different things leading up to him being drafted, he's one of those guys that when you watch him, he always says something wise beyond his years. He always has the right answer to say. He always seemed so calm and collective whenever he's in front of a camera. So when you saw him say those things and show that level of frustration, it was even magnified more in my brain because I'm like, damn, it has to be that bad in Nashville right now for him to respond this way because we haven't seen that side of him. But I think to your point, there's an appreciation in Nashville for him saying that and him calling out the guys in the locker room, the coaching staff, the organization. When your quarterback, the guy you drafted first overall, is showing that level of frustration that early in the season, I feel like it puts everybody on notice. Because if I'm ownership and I'm Amy Adams Strong and I'm watching that, I'm like, well, what the hell is going on there? Like, why is this guy that frustrated after a game? Like, who is doing him a disservice? Because I have to figure this out and get it corrected.
You can see him on the call for Chargers Dolphins Sunday on CBS. Nobody better, one of my favorite people in the business. Jason McCourty, thanks for being here, man.
I can't wait to get on the guitar, you and you know, saying we knock down a place again. Good to see you, Tom.
I'll put together a riff or something. I'll send it to you. You add the vocals, man. We'll collaborate. Keep this thing rolling. Great to see you,
we
buddy.
Got it.
We'll do this again soon.
Awesome. Yes.
Dude, he's phenomenal in terms of breaking it down. I thought it was really interesting, too, the way that he was talking about some of the challenges the Eagles have on both sides of the ball. When you hear from somebody who sees as much ball and is as smart as Jason McCourty, Eagles have no identity on offense. Yep. And that defensively, they, last night at least, don't have the depth to combat it. Those are things that if I'm Howie Roseman, who is as active as any GM on the phones, wants to be in every deal, is always going to be looking to push the envelope and improve the roster. If I'm thinking the same thing, and I'm Howie Roseman, I'm probably looking at, okay, what, if anything, don't make a trade, don't sign somebody just to make a trade or just to sign somebody, but there may be some things we need to address to make sure this thing gets going in the right direction.
And I know Jalen Carter was out last night, but the thing that stuck out for me most was the Eagles just got pushed around on the front and on the line. And you haven't seen that an Eagles team get pushed around like that in the last, what, 2-3 years, it seems like. And, you know, that kind of stuck out with me. And then you saw it the way Scadaboo was getting through. Even on the goal line carries, he was just kind of getting through and they're pushing him into the end zone. You don't see an Eagles team get manhandled like that.
The Eagles have been the bully.
Right.
Since Nick Sirianni got there, the Eagles have been the bully. They were the bully in the Super Bowl last year. Last night, they got bullied. And we'll find out 10 days from now exactly how they respond. Yeah. A lot more to come on this show. We got injury updates, including for a certain quarterback getting back on the field today. We'll discuss that right on the other side of this break. It's the Rich Eisen Show with Tom Pelissero.
I didn't think the pain from the shingles rash would affect simple everyday tasks like bathing, getting dressed, or even walking around. I was wrong. Though not everyone at risk will develop it, 99% of people over the age of 50 already have the virus that causes shingles, and it could reactivate at any time. I developed it, and the blistering rash lasted for weeks. Don't learn the hard way, like I did. Talk to your doctor or pharmacist today. Sponsored by GSK.
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
To the Rich Eisen Show, Tom Pelissero in for Rich, who is going to join us shortly from London, site of Broncos-Jets on Sunday. Rich will be on the call for that game early Sunday morning on NFL Network. I say early because I'm in makeup at 3:30 a.m.
Look at you.
Prior to the 4 a.m. Pacific time pregame show. It'll be later in London. We are on ESPN Radio. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. See why over 43 million drivers trust Progressive to stay protected on the road. See for yourself at progressive.com. A few injury updates with NFL head coaches meeting with the media this morning. The most substantial one, Kyler Murray is going to be back on the field today. Kyler Murray had a foot, some type of an issue. In the game, he briefly went to the locker room, then he came back out, finished off the game, didn't practice the last 2 days. Jonathan Gannon told reporters Kyler is going to be out there today, which you would think would put him trending toward playing on Sunday. In what, I mean, quite frankly, it's a must-win type of a game against a Colts team that has been the best positive story maybe in the entire NFL this season. No team in NFL history had ever lost three consecutive games on a last-second walk-off field goal until the Cardinals. And anecdotally speaking, I'm pretty sure no team in NFL history has ever lost any game the way the Cardinals did last week, with dropping a ball before crossing the goal line, with an interception turned fumble turned touchdown. Those are two plays I've seen separately. I have never seen them in the same game, much less one that would have been a blowout win for Arizona, if not for that sequence of events transpiring. Bucks not getting a whole lot of help. No Chris Godwin on the field for practice today. Todd Bowles had said he'd need to practice to play. Still dealing with that fibula injury. Leftover from last year. Hasn't entirely been, it seems, himself so far this season. Not on the practice field today. They haven't released the injury report, but sounds like no Chris Godwin. Still no Mike Evans. Still has been no problem to this point for the Buccaneers, who find ways to put up points regardless who's out there. As long as Emeka Ibuka is out there, they have found ways to put up points so far this season, but no help coming for the wide receiver front. Of course, Bucky Irving remains sidelined as well, so probably another week of Rashad White. And here's one we will be tracking throughout this show. No Ja'Marr Chase on the field.
Oh.
Zach Taylor, literally seconds ago, telling reporters Ja'Marr Chase got sick last night, questionable to play against the Packers.
Got sick.
With an illness, you'd say it's probably a lot better than 50-50 that he's going to play. Not a lot of 72-hour illnesses, but possible.
He was watching that Joe Flacco Browns tape. Was this thing on? Sorry.
We got it. I mean, you would probably have those suspicions a little bit more if you were still watching Jake Browning the last 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And that's nothing against Jake Browning. I don't think that anybody certainly Jake Browning didn't expect to play as badly as he has so far this season. What struck me watching the game live last week was there's just simple throws that Jake Browning is off on. Forget some of the decision-making things. It's like, how many times is Ja'Marr Chase going to run an outbreaking route and Jake Browning throws it on the inside shoulder for a pick? Right. Those are the things that just happen over and over. We'll talk more about Flacco getting another start against the Packers later on in the show. But my biggest question is just going to be, how quickly can you microwave the rhythm and timing and tempo on which NFL passing offenses function? As good as Ja'Marr Chase is, as good as T. Higgins is, as experienced as Joe Flacco is, and he's played in variations of this system multiple times. There is many stops now in the NFL, including going all the way back to Denver with Rich Gangarello. with the Jets when he was with Mike LaFleur. It's all part of that Shanahan McVay tree, but you still got to have reps with players on the field. Now Jamar Chase is sick, so you lose a Friday. Maybe he's out there for the walkthrough tomorrow, but just in terms of getting that rhythm against a really good Packers defense, the coming off the bye certainly has gone through, I'm sure, and adjusted certain things. They're really talented. They're going to be healthier. Micah Parsons is going to be all over the field. I wouldn't think that you're feeling really comfortable with Joe Flacco just standing in there and going through his progressions. A lot of it's going to have to be, hey, we're on the same page. I am getting the ball out of my hand to you as quickly as possible. What's that going to look like on Sunday if, in fact, Jamar Chase, who, again, questionable because of an illness for that game, what exactly is that going to look like right out of the gate? You're trying to keep your season alive at this point if you're the Bengals. You're 2-3.
I know.
The team you're looking up at in the division, it's not the Ravens. No, but we're not writing the Ravens off at 1-4, even though they might have to go into another game with Lamar.
We probably should be writing the Ravens off.
If anybody is capable of going on a run, they got the bye next week. They face the Rams on Sunday. We'll find out. I believe they're on the practice field a little bit here. We'll see if Lamar's doing anything. If not, I mean, at this point, it's already fairly obvious, it seems, that we're not going to have Lamar this week.
Right.
But take a look at that. You got the bye. Then you got Chicago and Miami. And if you're back healthier, besides Lamar, the fact that basically your whole defense isn't on the field right now, there's a lot of different factors in what's going on with Baltimore. Ronnie Stanley has been practicing more. Yeah. Should be okay to play this week.
We're going
to
play What's More Likely with Rich coming up here soon. But what percentage would you put the AFC North at getting two playoff teams at?
Based on where they are right now, not a particularly high percentage.
Right.
But if anybody's going to make a run, it's going to be Baltimore. Okay. And if you're the Bengals, you're just hoping, we need to do enough. There's enough pressure on their defense already. We all know that's an offense-driven team. When you pump all your money into the offense, you have to score points. Can they score enough that the defense doesn't get exposed to the degree they have so far? We will find that out starting in a must-watch type of a game on Sunday at Lambeau Field.
The Rich Eisen Show Podcast.